Welcome to this episode of the Pharmaceutical Executive Podcast. I'm Miranda Schmalfus, Group Social Media Editor for Pharmaceutical Executive. On this week's episode, I'm joined by Ian Baer, Founder and Chief Soothsayer at Sooth. Ian gives me a little bit of background about his company, and then we dive into some research they've done around Gen Z behavior and how pharmaceutical companies and healthcare advertising agencies can adapt their marketing strategies to get their attention. But first, a word from our sponsor, and I'll be right back with Ian.
Hey there, Andy Studna, co-host of the Applied Clinical Trials podcast here. Check out brand new episodes of the ACT podcast every 2 weeks on Tuesdays at 10. And you can find past episodes plus much more by logging on at appliedclinicaltrials.com.
Okay, Ian, so tell me about your background a little bit and what led to the founding of your company, Sooth.
Oh gosh, my background. I spent 35 years in the agency business and have a pretty unique background for an agency person, because usually you're a career, account leader, or you're a career strategist, or you're a career creative. And actually, my career spent doing all three. It divides up about half the time in strategy, but I started in account management. I've been president of a few agencies. I've been chief strategy officer at three agencies. I was chief creative officer at an agency for 7 years. So I wore every hat you can wear in the agency space, and decided to pivot out of the agency business at the end of 2022 because I had codified a very unique way of strategic problem solving and approaching marketing strategy. And once I realized that it actually was worthy of patent protection, we have a patent pending now for our method, spun out of the agency world and launched Sooth. So we've been up and running now for a bit over a year, and it's a practice dedicated to helping brands connect on an emotional level with the people who buy their products and services.
So what did your research around Gen Z behavior look like, and why did you choose to focus on them specifically?
So Gen Z, they fascinate me for a number of reasons. First of all, I'm always interested in the evolution of how people socialize, how people get things done, how people conduct business. We watched a tremendous acceleration of change through the pandemic, where, we used to have these digital consumers and these more traditional consumers. And then because everyone was forced to use technology in ways that for a lot of people might have been uncomfortable or they'd never used before, it all sort of came together and we became one technology-enabled consumer universe. And through that, as Gen Z was suddenly aging into adulthood, they became a really important group to watch. At the same time, I started to notice in the media, in advertising, even in my personal life, a lot of stereotyping and unfortunate tropes with regard to Gen Z that told me they were really misunderstood, especially by brands, being seen as selfie obsessed and social media obsessed and not nearly as serious a generation as they are. So early on in Sooth, because we are all about empathy and understanding and giving the people who buy from brands more of a voice in how brands market to them, I kind of took Gen Z under my wing a little bit as a pet project as we worked on different parts of our own methodologies to say, hey, what sorts of understandings can we tease out that might be escaping people out there. Eventually, that led us down a number of paths, including last summer, we made a decision to start a Gen Z audience council, where we've actually recruited undergraduate students, grad students, and working professionals from ages 18 to 25 to consult with us and actually help us help brands do a smarter, more effective, more empathetic job of connecting with this misunderstood generation. So it's really become a labor of love. Gen Z is every day changing the way consumers in our society socialize, shop, buy, how they relate to brands, how they choose to spend their money, how they choose to spend their time. They're having an outsized impact, not only on our economy, but on the way even older generations get things done. So we want to shine a big light on Gen Z, because we think they're not just an age cohort. We think they're the most impactful age cohort to focus on really over the next 20 years.
Okay, so what were some of your key findings from the research that you had?
Well, one thing that's important to understand is they have grown up in a very different world. If you think about where Gen Z was as the pandemic was happening, you have a lot of people who completed very significant parts of their education, the end of high school, first couple of years of college, very often isolated, you know, starting or even going through a full year or two of college from a dorm room or their bedroom at home. They grew up really with social media as a native language. And so it was very easy for them to just continue to use this ability to communicate through devices. But they didn't necessarily adapt all the skills that those of us of older generations were forced to adapt in terms of one-on-one interpersonal relationships, networking, developing close mentoring, you know, mentor-mentee relationships with people in the professional world. They're just a bit more isolated and in some cases, less sure of themselves individually. So they use social media not as a way to isolate themselves. It's what they know. They're the first generation of social natives. They ever since they sat, you know, a parent might have sat you down with a Club Penguin account when you were 3 years old, and that was your introduction to social media. And right there, you were kind of hooked. This is the way you got things done. And as you grew, and as the world around you evolved, and as you had access to more things, this way of relating became very natural. Then you saw it into Instagram by the time you were in high school. And so now here they are in the professional world, in the income earning world. You know, about one in five members of Gen Z is earning a six-figure income now. Their rate of home ownership far exceeds the rate of home ownership we saw for millennials or Gen X at the same age. They are saving money at a higher rate than any generation we've seen in 40 years. They're smart investors. They are a very serious, very important generation. But it's important to understand that they do see the world differently, and it's not something to poke fun at. It's something to learn from and adapt to.
Absolutely. And I love the social media as a native language. That was really great. And them being unsure of themselves, just unifying online as a group just to be like have that confidence, I think that's what makes them such a different kind of, for lack of a better term, different kind of beast when it comes to this kind of thing. Certainly understanding them is going to help you maybe adapt. You said adapt right at the end of your answer there, so that's where I want to go next. How can pharmaceutical companies and healthcare advertising agencies adapt their strategies to get Gen Z's attention and keep it? See, that's the thing. They'll change their mind a lot. So how do we keep their attention after we get it?
Well, there have been some people out there who say that brand loyalty, or really brands, period, are sort of an outdated concept with Gen Z. That's not true. But loyalty comes from a different place. Loyalty comes from feeling understood. Loyalty comes from having their emotional needs met. And that's really a trend we're seeing in consumerism overall, especially in the US. 90% of all the decisions people make with regard to brands are emotion. Pharma and medical advertising in general is a category that has really had a tendency to lean on a lot of clinical claims, clinical evidence, data, disclaimers, and so much detail that it has a tendency to genericize the message. Some of that, of course, is the result of very smart FDA regulations that make sure that pharma marketers can't make claims that the clinical data doesn't back up, or lead people down a certain path without letting them know in fair balance what could happen as a result of these medications. But in the end, we've got to be careful that we don't lose that ability to connect emotionally and the need to storytell. They are not a traditional branding and advertising shouted from the mountaintop, my brand claim is better than your brand claim type of audience. Again, they want to be understood. They don't want to be instructed. It's a very important thing to understand about Gen Z is once you start telling them how the world works and telling them how they should choose, they're going to recoil. They want to be invited in on their own terms. They want a brand to show some sense of shared values and empathy and recognizing what they think is important. They want to be invited in. And when they're invited in on their own terms, with things that they find meaningful and relevant, when they're brought into a story, when they can project themselves into a story and feel like they can jump into someone else's journey or relate to someone else's experience, the same way they may be, perusing TikTok videos for a certain summer look, they're also going to be looking at TikTok videos of somebody who is suffering with a health condition, with a mental health issue, with various very serious struggles. And when they feel they can identify emotionally, they're going to pay a lot more attention to the brand that is claiming 34% more this or that.
I think that as a group that emotionally engage with me, but I need it to feel right. I need it to be moral. I need it to be ethically correct because, yes. And I think that they're also hyper aware of like cancel culture, like taking the right steps at the necessary time, because I think that they're the generation that has called out the most, when something big happens, hello, brand, where are you? I'll stop buying these yoga pants. You say
exactly.
Something.
Exactly. There's so much talk about influence, but not enough talk about de-influence. And de-influence is every bit as powerful, if not frankly more powerful with Gen Z than more classic social influence, which really impacts every generation at this point. But the generation most motivated to change a behavior, to avoid a brand, to disrupt a business, because somebody that they respect has shared a point of view with them, that's Gen Z. So the de-influence factor is probably even more important than the influence factor when it comes to that generation.
Absolutely. I keep saying absolutely, but you have so many great points. So thanks. That was the end of my questions. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add?
Well, I have a little bit of a burning platform for the pharma industry. I have worked in the category since the mid-1990s. A little background for me. I'm actually a child of the healthcare industry. My mom was the executive director of the National Kidney Foundation in New York for 25 years. So I grew up around healthcare and fundraising. And when I had an opportunity about 10 years into my career to start working in the pharma category, it was really exciting to me. And one thing I have always found is that I think some, because of the regulatory environment, because legal concerns often keep pharma marketers very comfortable in the shallow end of the swimming pool when it comes to the use of data, when it comes to advancing customer experience, advancing creative storytelling. I feel like pharma marketing deserves the very best because you're talking about people's lives. You're not talking about whether they get to drive a sexy new car or whether, you know, they like the latest flavor of potato chips. You're talking about people's lives, the well-being of their families, their financial well-being when we think about the enormous impact that disease has on the financial stability of households. And years back, working with a major pharma company where a senior executive stood up in front of a room full of his agency partners at an annual planning meeting and said, is there anybody here who can make a case that in your area of the business, we are functioning at the very highest level of best practices, whether it's data, whether it's creative, whether it's media, you know, who here can stand up and make that case to me? And not a fan of the term best practices. We'll save that for another conversation. I just think that that means that's something that worked for somebody else. It, you know, I think people like to lean on that way too much. But I was really struck in that moment that no one could make that case. And I think very often, because of the necessarily conservative nature of pharmaceutical marketing, some of the boldest, most innovative marketing tactics are being denied to the healthcare and pharmaceutical categories. And I think, especially with the tremendous opportunity that data presents to be an empathy engine for brands, to unlock that level of understanding that we talked about, I think there's a call to the entire industry and all of us who care about using marketing to improve human lives to step up and really embrace the role that empathetic use of data and technology can play to really turn pharma marketing loose and play a role in not just gaining market share, but really helping people get everything they can out of their experiences with these amazing products and innovations.
I agree with that. I think that it's very interesting because it brings up the conversation of access, right? Because if I see it on TV, if I see it in my feed, I can bring it to my doctor and say, hey, like I've seen this and, you know, maybe this could help me. And then you can have that conversation. But if you don't even know to ask about it, and with some of my other brands, like Applied Clinical Trials, we deal with that with ACT, with getting access to clinical research or being in trials. If you don't know that they're happening.
That's right. You know, those who are unregulated by the FDA pushing, you know, nutraceutical products and nutritional supplements, they can make some crazy ass claims and no one shuts them down. So unfortunately, some of the best storytelling is happening among the least credible, least trustworthy voices out there. You know, I've seen very irresponsible social media ads for products that claim to outperform prescription drugs and treating things like diabetes and cardiovascular disease. And I just think it's a huge shame that we haven't seen more pharmaceutical marketers step up and embrace empathetic storytelling as a way to connect with people. I do understand the nature of the regulatory environment. I have been dealing in it now for the vast majority of my career. But I also know there are ways to bring people's stories out into the open, to bring patient stories, caregiver stories, to understand patients' journeys and encourage people to get diagnosed when very often the symptoms or things they read are keeping them away from doctors' offices. Again, I just think we can give people something better.
I agree with you. Ian, thank you so much for your time today. This has been so insightful and so great.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to being able to get your insights on the round table. That just was highlighted through this whole conversation. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Farm Exec Podcast, where we take you behind the headlines to provide expert tips from industry leaders. Remember, you can always find us on the web at farmexec.com, on Twitter at farmexec, and on Instagram at farmexecutive. The views on this podcast do not reflect those of MJH Farm Exec's parent company or our advertisers. For editorial questions or to get in touch with our editors, please email us at farmexec@mjhlifesciences.com. And for sponsorship opportunities, please go to farmexec.com/advertise. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you next time.